Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have an exciting show for you tonight. I'm a fan of the person we have on, Fraser Kane from the publisher of Universe Today, and also a podcast that I started listening to when it very first started, and on and off many times over, I think it's been 13 years or something like that. They're already up to episode 500, and that's called Astronomy Cast, and I love the show. And so anyway, I was really happy that Fraser is not someone that is really down with UFOs. We will discuss it and we'll get his opinion. And I promise you it won't be violent or anything. We may have a couple of semi-soft debates about the topic, and we'll see where it goes from there. And then we're going to be talking a lot of space and all that stuff later on in the show. After the first hour, we will take calls. Anyone would like to call in and ask questions, and the host some questions or whatever. We will go from there. So I want to thank everyone that supports the show. Anyone can do that. You can find that info on podcastufo.com. And generally, we are live on KGRA Radio. And so, first of all, the producer Race Hobbs is stuck somewhere in a canyon. He was actually in a tunnel. People were trying to turn around. It was a big mess. And so his fill-in guy sent me his radar picture. There's tornadoes all in his area. So they're just popping on a replay over there. So I apologize for you regular. I don't even know how to get to you people over at KGRA Radio. Hopefully they'll wander over to the YouTube channel or my website and see the show. Alejandro, welcome to the show.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing just great. Doing great. It's raining and pouring. It's raining and pouring, I guess, the same thing, but it's cold, chilly. We're getting the winter chill already here in October.
Yeah, it's raining here, and it's cold for Arizona. It's probably still in the 70s or 80s, but Arizona, that's very cold.
Yeah. I know. And, well, you need the rain, right?
Yeah, we've got it, yeah. So we've got a lot of rain going on, but, we do need it.
Yeah, so, well, that's good. I hear the whole Southwest is going to get quite a deluge out there. And so what's going on in the UFO, et cetera, world?
Yeah, so I've got three stories I would like to cover, two UFOs, and in celebration of your guest today, or just because I love space, I've got a space one, too, my own space story. So, to begin, I'm not sure if this is even a new story, but it's something someone posted in the Open Mind UFO News group, and this is from casino.org, and they actually have a UFO site. It's pretty cool, where they've got a lot of information, some stats and everything regarding UFOs, and of course, up top, what do they have? They've got the odds of seeing a UFO. So according to Las Vegas, essentially, it looks like, if I'm reading this, it's a plus 124,700, which I think means 1,247 to 1 odds that you'll see a UFO.
That's not that bad.
Yeah. And well, that's just Alabama, it looks like. So they've got everything for every different state. Let's see. We'll just look up a couple. In Maine, it's a lot better. It's 370 to 1.
That's because there's only 370 people in Maine, I think.
Yeah. And then let's check Arizona really well. Wow, the odds are really – I think their numbers are way off according to – I'm sure they didn't use like population and stuff like that. But Arizona, they have it at something like nearly 2,000 to 1 odds, so very high, which is kind of weird. But there's a lot more information about history of UFO sightings, including a timeline that's interactive where you can click and look at different sightings. It also has a few facts. And here they are. These are interesting. You're most likely to see a UFO in Wyoming, according to them. Wow. Florida is the state with the lowest odds of seeing a UFO, which is according to them, which is completely different than any statistics I've
ever seen.
So I don't know where they're getting their numbers.
Gulf
and then
Breeze,
it says,
over
40,000 Americans have taken out alien abduction insurance.
Boy, I didn't see that coming.
How weird is that?
Yeah,
so they've got a lot of
starting a company.
Facts. I'm not sure where they get their numbers. I would argue their numbers, but it is pretty interesting.
Can you, before you go on there, so if you do happen to get abducted, how do you collect your, you know?
I don't know. You know, I've heard of this before, actually, this alien abduction insurance, because you can get insurance pretty much for everything. And
Lloyd's of London. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And I think this is a Lloyd's product as well. So you'd have to look that up if you're looking to get alien abduction insurance. Although, you know, I'm sure, as we know, especially, that many of those 40,000, probably the majority, probably really genuinely believe that, you know, they may be abducted or have been before. So
wow.
Who knows?
Yeah, I would really love to see that policy. That would
yeah,
be
really
interesting.
But the interface and the graphics, you can tell that this they spent a lot of time on this site, and it's really, really cool. In fact, there's a little map, and when you click on your country or where you are, your state, I mean, this little UFO flies above it and beams this little light down. So the graphics are really cool. It's a really cool site.
Huh. Interesting. I'll have
something
to check
to
out.
Check out.
Yeah.
So a couple other pieces of news. So you and I talked at length about this on my podcast, but To the Stars Academy has come out with an article recently about some alleged anomalous materials that they are examining. You know, I complained a lot about how they wrote this article and how it came about, but the point is, what's interesting, of course, is they have this project where they're taking what people are claiming to be mysterious material, and they're actually looking into it. It appears that the material they're looking into right now are what are known as art parts. So it's something Art Bell got. And we're deducing this because the article said it had similar elements, magnesium, zinc, bismuth, that were claimed in small layers, just like were claimed that were to be part of these art parts. And the story, and here was my big complaint, the article referred to this material and that it has been out there for decades. If it is arts parts, which I'm sure it is, they really, I feel, should have done a whole history of the material, you know, how it was anonymously sent to Art Bell. So we have a full story of what the heck this stuff is. I hope that it was just an oversight, because it's kind of deceptive not to give history, even if it hurts the credibility. I mean, because that history is going to come out regardless. So
that's right.
We should know either way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another development. So researchers have found, and I'm not sure who found this in the beginning. I think it might have been this website, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Scientific Research. It's a blog on Blogspot. But they looked into the SEC files. This is the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And they actually found some paperwork, an update on To the Stars Academy. And if we read this right, some of the things that it says here is that Dr. Gary Nolan resigned in late August. Yeah.
Wow.
We were talking about him. He's the one who analyzed these alleged, you know, alien bodies out of Peru, which, of course, all turned out to be human, which we knew before,
Yeah. Even
though people like Dr. Stephen Greer claim otherwise. But Dr. Greer is the one who hired this guy to look into it, or at least partnered with him, and then was unfortunately did not like his results because it looks alien, but it's not. But the most shocking thing in here is that it looks like, let me find the number, but it's huge. It looks like they are in debt to the tune of nearly $40 million.
How could that be even possible?
I don't know. Let me read this to you. So this is page 13, note 2. And the title is Growing Concern. It says the accompanying financial statements have been prepared on a growing concern basis, which contemplates the realization of assets and blah, 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 blah. Let me get to the last sentence. The company has incurred losses from operations and has an accumulated deficit at June 30th, 2018, of $37,432,000. These factors raise doubt about the company's ability to continue as a growing concern.
I can't even imagine what,
Yeah, this is really weird. Now, there were some other documents that came out, and one of the other documents that is in here talks about their material studies program, essentially the Atom Project. And it also talks about another partnership they have, research that they've got going on with EarthTech International regarding Beamed Energy Launch Systems Program, a planning project, BELS. And I think you could ask your guest, this would probably be an interesting topic for Fraser, about this, because this is essentially the same technology that they want to use for that Yuri Gellner, I forget his last name.
Yuri Geller?
Yeah. No, yeah. The Russian billionaire who started this project.
Yeah. I don't know his name right off, but I know who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So he wanted to send all of these little micro spaceships using a laser that pushes them, the solar technology. Essentially, it's like a light technology where these lasers push these objects along. So that may be it. Now, of course, many of the members of To the Stars are also previous members, or at least worked with Bigelow Aerospace. Bigelow Aerospace has some huge contracts, especially with Boeing they've partnered up with. They're working with NASA. So it could be that there is a very high dollar project that they're being farmed out to help with Bigelow. That could explain this, because, of course, the dollars they're dealing with are huge when it comes to some of these aerospace projects. So there could be an answer that doesn't mean that it is what it looks like, which is that they're $37 million in debt and they're screwed. How could they have spent that much money? It could be part of some work they're doing where they are planning to recover that. It could be work with, I would imagine that would be through Bigelow, because he's got, of course, his ties into the space industry.
Right. That's Yuri Milner is the person you were
thinking. Milner.
Yeah.
I knew it was close.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So speaking of Bigelow, but more along the space, is this new space race. So, of course, I've talked a lot about the space race to the moon and some of the other motivations going on than just science. Of course, there's a lot of politics and global politics going on there. But there are also politics going on in another really important race, which is to get the United States back in the game of getting humans to the International Space Station. So getting humans into space. And there's actually two spacecraft that have been given the green light who are already scheduled to take humans, and that is the SpaceX Dragon spacecraft and then the Boeing Starliner. So I've got an article in Den of Geek all about these. What I kind of did was a head-to-head, you know, what are the similarities and the differences between these two? And there are some really interesting things about each. The SpaceX Dragon, if you see the interior, looks a lot like a Tesla car. It's very fancy, minimalistic, super futuristic, with these panels, display panels that you can fold away, and they're touchscreen and everything. So it's pretty cool. What's unique, a couple of things that are unique about the Dragon spacecraft. One is that it has a trunk, just like a car. So it has a section that holds the solar panels that also can hold a bunch more cargo. So that's going to be really important. This is unpressurized cargo, so humans can't fit in there, but a lot of other cargo can, which is really important. Now, the cargo in the trunk is going for a one-way trip, because this trunk actually burns up in the atmosphere when they come back in. But anything else they can, you know, they can stuff in the capsule if there aren't any humans for bringing back more material. But that's been one benefit that the Dragon capsule has had. It's already been going to the ISS, the uncrewed version, and it's able to bring materials back as well. Now, the Dragon capsule, here's one big difference. It is going to use more of a traditional parachute, just like the Apollo program. It will fall into the ocean, slowed down by a parachute. One of the things they're working on, they were hoping to have, is more of a kind of futuristic where this thing can land just like their Falcon rockets do, where they have a retro engines that will slow the craft down so it can land on land, but that isn't ready. So at least at the beginning, they're going to have these parachutes that are going to be slowing it down. Getting to the Starliner, one of the cool things about the Starliner on that front is that the Starliner is actually going to land on the ground. It's got these giant balloons that blow up and then allow it. It's slowed down by a parachute, but these balloons allow it to land on the balloons soft enough where they can make ground landings. So that's going to be very important. It's going to be much easier to retrieve, and I think it'd be really scary. It's one of the scariest parts, I think, in all the space movies, when they come back and they've got to land in the ocean, and, you know, it's scary. What if something happens? And, of course, there was an incident where, you know, it's debated exactly what happened. I think now it's not so much, but one of the astronauts, I guess, freaked out and pulled the door open, essentially, and almost drowned when I forget the details. I'm sure Fraser would have that, tasking him with all of this stuff. But yeah, that's one cool thing about the Starliner. The Starliner, this is really interesting too. So space tourism is something new that's starting up. The big news SpaceX made in the last few weeks is that they're going to fly this Japanese millionaire around the moon. Well, the Starliner says they're going to be doing that too. They're going to be working with a company called Space Adventures. And Space Adventures was renting seats from the Russians to fly people to the ISS. They did this a few times in the 90s, early 2000s. But they stopped because essentially the U.S. was renting all those seats, those extra seats. Well, now what the Starliner says, Boeing says, is they're going to actually rent extra seats to potential space tourists. So they might be doing that. They're going to be working with Space Adventures. So they may be flying, you know, if they're flying humans up as soon as next year, they may be doing this in the next year or two, renting out seats for people to be able to fly up to the ISS, just like the Russians were doing. So that's some interesting stuff here. You could look into it more. The one thing that makes this very pressing is that our contract with Russia to take us to the ISS, the U.S. astronauts, is expiring in April 2019, which happens to be the same month that SpaceX will be taking the first their first crew to the ISS. But we actually have, I guess, rented seats up until November of next year with the Russians. But after that, you know, we've got to figure out what we're going to do to get people up there. So hopefully there will be no more delays. Boeing was a front runner for a long time. Of course, they actually have built all of the spacecraft that have taken humans into space for NASA. But surprisingly, they just had some issues, and SpaceX came from behind, and SpaceX is right now ahead of the race. They most likely will be the first to, you know, be a commercial private organization to take astronauts to the ISS. Right. Very exciting.
Yeah, it is. Wow, interesting. So I think it's really amazing that there's actually going to be passengers, you know, flying. And I wonder, you know, what the tickets cost. It's amazing. I wonder if they're going to double book too, you know.
Well, they're huge. In fact, we've got another article, a supplemental, an article coming out that I did on space tourism. And it's part of the magazine we put together for Den of Geek for the New York Comic Con, which is going on something like the end of this week, I think it starts. And so that will be out soon. But I've got pricing for all of the different options out there. But we don't know how much the Japanese gentleman is going to be paying to go around the moon. But these travelers with Space Adventures are paying hundreds of millions of dollars. So, I mean, it ain't cheap.
Yeah, rightly so. I mean, it costs so much per pound just to get out of orbit. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All right, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, have a great show. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks. All right, so our guest, Fraser Kane, I contacted him, I believe, quite a while ago. I was so glad when he finally said that he would actually be come on the show. First off, I remember contacting him. He said something along the lines of, no, I don't want to talk about UFOs, but I'm going to talk about him for a little while. Fraser Kane, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Love your podcast, as you probably know after I've been talking about it. And you co-host with Dr. Pamela Gay, and she is such a delight, entertaining, and so much fun. And she really, the thing that I like the best about your show is that you both really explain in terms that someone like myself and anyone is just getting into it can actually understand.
Yeah, that's really the wonderful thing about Astronomy Cast is Pamela knows the material so deeply that we don't have to prepare. Right? There's
so
no
you
script.
Just have a topic and you just go
we
into
just
it.
Have a topic and amazing. We're just following my curiosity. I'm the 4-year-old, like, what about black holes? And, you know, and I just ask my questions, and she patiently answers all of my questions. So it's been wonderful and an absolute honor to work with her over these 12 years.
We just
wrapped up episode 500 right. of the podcast, and we're still going strong. So
it's amazing. And now I somehow found out about your podcast and actually listened to the very first one when it came out. I think I wrote that in the email to you. I was living in California at the time, and it was my son who contacted me. He said, hey, check out this new podcast is coming out. And so I think it was maybe either the first or second episode, but I do remember I did listen to the first episode. So, and you pretty much stayed very consistent. I know you changed a little bit. You were doing Google Hangouts with a whole bunch of people at one time. I remember that transition. And then now it's back to just you and Pamela again. It's really good show.
Well, we switched to doing. We used to do the shows like we would record the episode over Skype, kind of like what you're doing. But yeah. We would, you know, it was just a utility for us to be able to record the show, and then when it was done, we would process the audio and release it as a podcast. And then at some point, I think in like 2011, 2012, I had the bright idea that we should switch to doing the show as a live show to bring in the live audience aspect of it, and that set us on a whole new path, and we still do it. So every episode we do is a live episode. Half an hour of it is the two of us hanging out and doing the actual episode, and the other half hour is us just answering questions and interacting with the audience. And there is nothing like doing a live show for helping you focusing your brain, helping you understand what you know, what you don't know, because you're on the spot all the time. And right. So I highly recommend it for anybody who wants to create some kind of content and wants to take their, I guess, what they do to the next level, turn it into a live show and answer people's questions, and you will be amazed at how quickly all of the puzzle pieces fit into your brain. But I think what you're probably talking about is the Weekly Space Hangout. So that's a separate show, which is very similar to your news part, where different space journalists join me and we talk about the big events of the week. And so there's sort of two shows. We do so many shows now, it's kind of hard to keep track of them all.
Yes, and you have your own YouTube channel, which is very, very active. And by the way, really nice production on your videos on that, too.
Thank you so much.
You do a lot of work on that.
No, and it's funny. If you go right back to the beginning, you can see our first experiments. They were a couple of minutes long, and it was me sort of slouching in a forest, and we showed a couple of pictures, and now the new ones are 15, sometimes 20 minutes long, very 4K video. Almost the entire wow. thing has just really beautiful background graphics that we're using. So
yeah.
So it's been this learning process. It only took us 360 episodes to learn all the little lessons that we wanted to get to where we are now. And we're only really still a tiny piece along the journey as we learn to make better space content.
Yes. Well, by the way, I do agree with you about the live show aspect. I've been doing, I don't know, maybe 3 years or something like that, live, maybe longer, live shows, and it's horrifying. But at the same time, you're right, it keeps you sharp, and I won't go back to a recorded show now unless I have to for some reason. You know?
Yeah, there's something nice to be able to just like record the show. It's done.
No editing.
You don't have to edit it. It's just finished. You did it.
Right.
Move on.
Right, right. So I in our conversation ahead of the show, I mentioned to you that I wanted to discuss UFOs for a little bit of the show, And then I have a whole bunch of space stuff I'd like to talk about.
Sure. Well, however you want to balance it out, I'm cool with either topic.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't even call myself an amateur astronomer or anything like that. I'm just a fan of astronomy. That's the best way I'd put it. And I'm also, I'm not a ufologist, so to speak. I'm someone that talks to people about UFOs and gets their ideas, and that's why I have all kinds of people on the show. I did my first UFO debate when I was only 20 episodes in with Dr. Seth Shostak at SETI, and he really crushed me. That was... and I'm not saying that I'm good at debating, and I'm not really looking for a debate, but in our email exchange, I sense that you did not think that there was anything to the UFO topic. So I guess I'll ask you, do you think there's anything to UFOs?
No, and we can kind of go into it for sure. And I can sort of explain my perspective on it. But do I think that the Earth is being regularly visited by aliens from another world? No, I don't think so. And to sort of more specifically say it, is that I am unconvinced of any of the evidence that says that we are. That's all. So,
all right. Well,
there is nothing that.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. What about people that are real, have real credible people that have had really credible sightings that are unexplainable, and sometimes mass sightings. I mean, I could go into a number of sightings.
Mm-hmm,
and we're not saying that they're – I'm not also jumping on the alien bandwagon, because I don't care how long anyone's been doing what I'm doing. As far as I know, no one really knows what's going on, but they know something's going on. And that's the questions I'd like to ask you. What do you think – is there something to the sightings, that the 30,000 sightings a year or whatever it is – with a small portion of them unexplainable? Do you think there's something to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to just go back to the term, right? Unidentified flying objects.
Right.
So so things are unidentified, and they are flying, and they are objects. And I think it's a perfectly rational way to describe a thing that's flying through the air that you don't know what it is. And so for you to then – for anybody to make a – to then take that and make the leap to say that they know what it is – That is sort of jumping to a conclusion before you've gathered the evidence for what it is that you found. And the most fundamental question, the deepest, most important question that we can ask ourselves as human beings, as sentient creatures here in this tiny rock floating in the middle of this vast cosmos, is, are we alone? Right. It is the most important question that we can possibly ask. And it's definitely not an understatement to say that I've dedicated my life to helping in that search, to helping to communicate that search, to help people sort of come to grips with the wonder and scale of this search for life in the universe. I would say probably a third or a quarter of the episodes that I do on my YouTube channel are in some way connected to this topic. So there is, in my mind, no more important question that you can possibly ask. It fascinates me. The paradox of why we don't have evidence for aliens haunts me. You always go back to that Arthur C. Clarke question, like either the universe is – either we're alone in the universe or we're not.
I was just going to look for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And both –
both are horrifying.
Both of those, right? Like if we're alone, that's weird, because the universe is big and it's old, and life on Earth formed the moment that it could have. And there's no reason under the laws of physics why there shouldn't be a way that a technological civilization should be able to travel from world to world. Those all seem like they're givens. Where is the, but then where is the evidence? And so just to finish this up. And so I feel like with a question that's that important, that fundamental, where the ramifications of the answer would have implications to every part of our society, you want to be sure. You want to feel like the evidence that has been gathered really supports the conclusion that it turns out we're not alone in the universe. And so so people always ask me, like, do I believe in aliens? And my answer is always just like, I'm unconvinced by the evidence that has been provided so far. I absolutely believe that there are things that are unidentified and they are flying and they are objects, but I don't have a way to say what they are. And I don't believe that any of the evidence that has been provided so far indicates that they're aliens. I'd love to know if there's aliens.
Well, I'll agree with you on that, because I also say, you know, I've said a number of times on this show that if someone tells you they know exactly what these things are, then run, because no one really knows. And the reason, if it does boil down to evidence, we don't really know for sure. But I do believe I have an open mind in the topic, of course, because I had a UFO sighting that I absolutely could not explain what it was. And it's no technology that I don't think we've ever had, the technology that I saw. And I do want to talk a little bit about that, too. But so I think my personal view is that it's possible that we are being visited by alien intelligence. And the reason I think it's possible is a number of reasons. First of all, we're a very young civilization compared to what could be out there. I mean, we're a young solar system, so and on and on. And if you think about, if someone 150 years ago, if you handed them a walkie-talkie, today's walkie-talkie, you know, they wouldn't understand it. You know, perhaps an intelligence out there has, and I think you kind of alluded to this, has learned how to travel the stars, has learned the physics of how to do it, whether it's bending space-time or whatever it is. So it is possible that we could be being visited. Otherwise, we have to come up with what else, you know, what other thoughts could it be? Could it be interdimensional? There's people that think it could be that, or time travel, or, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of things. But there's definitely something weird going on. And have you
I'm not sure that there's anything weird going on, but so you know, we can have a conversation about that. But it's like, and so that's all. It really, it's just like, what does it take to convince you, right? So if you show me a box and the box is closed and you say, what's in the box? My answer is, I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. I can make some guesses about the size of things that could be in there. But really, at the end, the answer is I don't know. And until I can open the box and look inside and study, then I can make some conclusions. And so I feel like the only honest answer to say is I don't know. And then I let the evidence convince me either way. Right. So if something can be provided that is compelling evidence, then I will change my position in a heartbeat. Right. You have experienced, or you believe, or that you have seen something that, you know, that you couldn't explain, but you can't make the leap, or I don't think it's the right thing to make the leap to then you know what it is, because then that closes you down to the possibilities for what it could be.
Sure.
And so it's sort of more like, for now, you're like, I saw something super weird and I don't know what it was. And until I have some way of knowing, that trail ends there for now. And then hopefully later on, some new piece of information is going to come your way. Someone's going to go, oh, turns out there was a flight that was going here. It was a new stealth bomber that was being tested by the Air Force, and they've written you a personal letter and they've apologized for freaking you out. And here's all the evidence. You're like, oh, okay, new stealth aircraft. Got it. Okay. Evidence supplied. And now I'm convinced.
Yeah.
It has to remain in the I don't know category.
Right. Have you heard of the USS Nimitz case in 2004? There was a lot of talk about it. That was, you know, the Navy was involved, and there was some filming. How about, did you happen to pay attention when the story came out December 16th last year about the Pentagon's search for UFOs?
I'd heard a bit about this, yeah, and yeah. You know, I didn't look too deeply into it because it looked to me like a lot of blobs moving on a TV screen. So,
in the particular that particular video, but they just the fact that they were looking into the topic alone,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and they actually admitted.
Well, and you can see why they would, right? Like again, the existence of aliens capable of traveling from world to world means someone essentially is technologically way beyond anything that we can possibly comprehend. It would be a serious threat to Earth and to the existing nations and all of that, right? It would be an existential threat. So it definitely makes sense to have a look around to just see if you can understand what's going on there and then gather any evidence that you can find.
That's right. So let's see. I think it was called something like the Advanced Aerospace Threat Investigation Program. I believe that's what they called that. So it had threat right in the word, you know, right in the title, mm-hmm. of it, which, yeah, it does make total sense. All right, everyone, that's it for the free part of the show. Anyone can support the show for only $2 or more a month, and all that information's on podcastufo.com. Thanks so much for listening. Next week, we have Paul Stark. He's the producer, I believe director as well, of The Vatican and UFOs. And I want to thank everyone that helped out with the show. I also want to thank Alejandro Rojas and on Open Minds. He joins us most weeks. And I want to thank our guest, Fraser Kane. And you can see his information if you Google him. It's F-R-A-S-E-R. His last name is C-A-I-N. He's got a great YouTube channel. He also is on Astronomy Cast, a great podcast I've listened to for years. And that's it for the show. I want to thank you, the listener, and we'll be back next week. Keep your eyes to the sky.